More than a week had passed since the trouble at Blind Pete's place. During that time, an ice storm had forced the five men to hold up for a couple of miserable days, but then they'd been able to ride on, heading toward the Canadian border. Willie Deaver was pretty sure they had passed the border by now and were actually in Canada. The men they were supposed to meet ought to be waiting for him somewhere close by, unless St. John and his people had grown impatient and left. Deaver was not going to be happy if that happened. So it was with a sense of relief that he spotted a thread of smoke curling into the sky up ahead as he and his men rode along a twisting hogback bridge. That was the signal he'd been looking for during the past 2 days. Deaver pointed out the smoke to Caleb Manning.
That's got to be them.
Or else it's coming from some fur trapper's cabin.
We'll be able to tell when we get there.
They followed the smoke and soon descended from the ridge, entering a small valley where a cold wind whipped down from the north. Deaver led the way with Manning riding behind him. Bringing up the rear were Cy Plunkett, Darwin Heath, and Fred Jordan. Plunkett was a rotund little Englishman who was much tougher than he looked. Heath was thin and dark, with a narrow face deeply pocked by the childhood illness that had almost killed him. Jordan was a big blond man who was always grinning, no matter what sort of terrible thing he was doing at the time. Now Plunkett, being an Englishman, was the one who'd put them in contact with Odell St. John, a fellow Britisher, during one of the gang's periodic trips back to St. Louis. Deaver wasn't sure exactly what St. John's game was. Maybe he was just out to make some fast money, or maybe he was working for the British government. But again, Deaver didn't care. The payoff was all that mattered. Deaver and his men rode through a thick stand of trees, and when they emerged from the woods, they saw a camp beside a small stream. Half a dozen tents were pitched not far from the creek, and the smoke rose from a little crackling fire nearby. Some saddle mounts were penned in a rope corral, along with several large, heavy-built pack animals. A number of crates were stacked on the ground beside the tents and covered with a large piece of canvas. The ends of the crates peeked out so that Deaver could tell what they were. Most of the men in the camp wore buckskins or homespun work shirts and corduroy trousers, just like Deaver and his companion. One individual, though, stood out from the others. He wore a dark suit, including a swallowtail coat, high-topped black boots, a white shirt, and a cravat. He was bareheaded as he strode forward to meet Deaver. The wind ruffled his brown hair, which matched his close-cropped beard.
Mr. Deaver, how utterly splendid to see you again.
Yeah.
You're late?
Deaver motioned for his men to dismount.
Ice storm caught us a few days ago. It wasn't safe to travel until the ice melted off.
I understand. Oh, we've had a bit of inclement weather up here as well. I told the men that was probably what delayed you. But you're here now, eh? And ready to do business?
That's right. If we're satisfied with the quality of the goods you brought with you.
Oh, you will be. But there'll be plenty of time for you to examine the merchandise. First, though, how about a drink?
That sounds mighty good to me. It's been a long, thirsty ride.
Sure. A drink will be fine.
Excellent. Brutus, bring the jug.
They all gathered around the fire to pass the jug from man to man.
I see there are 13 of us here, all told. A somewhat less righteous band of apostles than the original, eh?
Well, I don't know about calling us apostles. They weren't rich from what I remember of my ma reading to me from the good book a long, long time ago, and I intend to be a rich man.
The prospect of passing a camel through the eye of a needle doesn't trouble you, eh?
Not one damn bit. And it probably wouldn't even if I knew what in blazes you were talking about.
Very well. Down to business.
St. John led the way to the stack of crates and threw back the canvas so that one of the long wooden boxes was revealed.
Brutus!
St. John had the man, who was evidently his lieutenant, use a heavy-bladed knife to pry up the lid nailed onto the crate. number of long, oilcloth-wrapped shapes lay in the box. Brutus picked up one of them and unwrapped it, revealing a long-barreled flintlock rifle. All the brasswork on the weapon gleamed with newness. St. John took the rifle from Brutus and passed it to Deaver.
The finest rifle of its kind to be found anywhere in the world, my friend. Direct from the factory in England to this backwards Eden.
Deaver examined the flintlock closely. Its mechanism appeared to be in perfect working order. It might have never been fired.
Where'd you get your hands on them?
I don't believe that information was included in our arrangement. However, I don't mind saying that there are always means by which to make certain a shipment of goods goes astray and never arrives at its intended destination. In this case, that destination would be a British army garrison in Ontario. A little bribery, the judicious use of blackmail. Arrangements can be made, you understand?
Sure. So, what do you think, Caleb?
Mighty fine weapon. Does it shoot true?
Huh? See for yourself. You're welcome to load and fire it.
Manning looked at Deaver, who thought about it for a second and then nodded. Manning used his own powder horn and a ball from a shot pouch to charge the rifle. When it was ready to fire, Manning lifted it to his shoulder. He hesitated, then swung the barrel around swiftly until it was aligned on St. John's chest.
How about I see just how well it works on a real target?
If you did, you'd be dead a split second later yourself. Brutus is standing behind you with an axe in his hands. It would be interesting to see how far your head flies after he cleaves it off your shoulders.
Caleb, point that thing somewhere else. St. John, tell your man to back off.
St. John made a languid motion as Manning lowered the flintlock.
Sorry, I didn't mean nothing by it. I was just having some sport.
Give me that.
Deaver took the rifle out of Manning's hand, turned, and aimed at a tree branch on the other side of the creek. He gave the rifle back to St. John.
It shoots true, all right. And the rest of them are all the same?
100 rifles brand new, just as we agreed 6 months ago in St. Louis. And here's the really intriguing bit. I can lay my hands on more of them if you like. As many as you want. Well, do we have a deal?
I want to take a look at every gun. You've got powder and shot, too?
Of course. And you're welcome to examine the merchandise. Actually, I've thrown in some extras. 2 dozen jugs of whiskey for our, coppery-hued friends.
Deaver couldn't help but chuckle when he thought about how much havoc a bunch of liquored-up redskins with brand-new rifles could wreak. There wouldn't be a fur trapper between here and halfway to Bent's Fort who was safe. It could turn into a bloodbath, all right. But it would put plenty of money in his pockets. Or at least it would once he sold all the furs that the Indians would trade him for these guns.
If everything is the way you say it is, St. John, then yeah, you've got a deal.
Then here's to a long and prosperous partnership, my friend.
The first few days in the village of the Assiniboine passed pleasantly for Preacher and his companions. Bentley gave him an empty lodge to use, although it was understood that the men would probably wind up spending the winter with some of the unattached female members of the band in their lodges. Preacher was in no hurry to do that, though, although Lorenzo soon made the acquaintance of a plump, middle-aged widow and began talking about moving in with her.
Of course, I don't understand a word the gal is saying, but she's right friendly, and I figure we can get to where we can communicate all right in other ways, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. Besides, a fine figure of a woman like that is bound to be a good cook. And Lord knows she can keep a man from freezing to death on them cold, cold nights.
What's your name?
Name? I don't know her name exactly. I've taken to calling her Honey Gal. She seemed to answer to it all right.
You seem to have everything settled. I'm glad for you, my friend.
But what about you? I've noticed that several of these ladies been flocking around you since we've been here.
Well, Audie's got a reputation. Reckon those gals are curious if it's true.
Reputation? What sort of reputation?
Well, you know how they call him Little Man?
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that in one particular respect, That name do not fit him at all.
I don't quite get what you... Wait just a doggone minute. Are you saying that... Well, did he... I mean...
The word you're looking for is prodigious.
No, sirree. I ain't looking for nothing. You can be mighty sure about that.
The next day, Lorenzo moved in with the widow he called Honey Gal. Audie, being fluent in the Assiniboine tongue, didn't have to guess the name of the woman he chose to warm his blankets for the winter. She was called Wildflower, and she was pretty enough to deserve the name. Nighthawk paired up with a widow named Otter's Pelt, who was just about as quiet as he was. If they didn't go loco from the silence, they'd probably have a pretty good winter together. That left Preacher alone in the lodge Bentleg had given him, except for Dog. He'd seen Ravenswing around the village a few times since they'd been here, but he hadn't spoken to her. Sometimes the warrior Two Bears was with her, and sometimes she was with the other women. The mountain man was surprised, but pleased, when the deer hide flap over the lodge's entrance was pulled back and he looked up to see Raven standing there.
Preacher, are you well?
Yes, I reckon I'm fine. How about you?
It has been good to be back, after being captured by Snakeheart's warriors.
I've heard mention of this fellow Snakeheart. Drove on war chief, ain't he?
That's right. He has risen to power among them in recent years by leading successful raids against the Assiniboine and other tribes. His war parties have captured many horses, many prisoners, and he has killed many of his enemies. Some say he would rather kill than capture.
But he didn't come along on this latest raid.
No, and for that I count myself lucky. You might not have prevailed against him, Preacher.
Oh, I'll take my chances.
But in this case, it would have been my life you were wagering with, as well as your own.
Yeah, you do got a point there. You want to sit for a spell?
She thought it over, but not for too damn long. She sat gracefully onto the robe with her legs tucked under her. Preacher sat cross-legged nearby, close but not improperly so. Dog lay on the other side of the lodge, his chin resting on his paws as he watched them.
Have you not found a woman with whom to spend the winter?
Oh, not yet, but I ain't been in a big hurry.
Your friends have all moved in with others.
Yeah, and I'm glad for them, but that's them, that's not me.
You do not want a woman?
Well, I never said that. How's old Two Bears doing?
Why would you ask me?
Well, I mean, I've seen the two of you spending time together. I figured that,
Perhaps you figured incorrectly.
Well, maybe so.
Two Bears is my friend, and as far as I know, he is well. I have not spoken to him for several days.
All right. I got the feeling from the way he acted that it was more than that. He was the one who persuaded Chief Bentleg to send the men after you when the Gros Ventre carried you off.
And I am grateful for that. But as for it being anything more, I cannot control what is in Two Bears' heart any more than I can control what is in mine.
Oh, Raven, I appreciate that, but I ain't so sure that'd be a good idea.
You do not find me comely?
Oh, well, you know good and well I do. Any man would have to be plumb blind and an idiot on top of it not to find you comely, Ravenswing. But I came to your village to spend a nice, peaceful winter, not have a fight on my hands.
You are afraid of Two Bears?
No, not hardly. But I do respect him. I don't want to have trouble with him, and I don't want your uncle having to deal with problems like that.
What about what I want? What about what you want in your heart?
It ain't just me I gotta consider. If I had to leave the village, then my friends would probably have to go too. They're happy here. I don't have any right to ruin that for them.
I thought you had more courage.
Well, you can think whatever you want. I still gotta do what I believe is best.
Raven got to her feet. Preacher followed suit.
I am sorry you feel the way you do.
Well, now believe me, Ravenswing, you ain't any sorrier about it than I am.
The next day, the sky was overcast, the sort of gunmetal gray sky that presaged a winter storm. The snow was probably still a few days away, but it was out there and it would arrive relatively soon. Preacher was resigned now to spend a chilly winter by himself. If he invited another woman to share his blankets after refusing Raven's wing, she would just be more insulted. He sat cross-legged outside the lodge with Lorenzo, Audie, and Nighthawk.
I was thinking we might ought to go hunting tomorrow or the next day. Probably be a good idea to lay in a supply of fresh meat before the storm blows in. We're liable to be stuck here for a while.
All the ice from that other storm melted off pretty quick.
Well, the storm that's coming won't be like that. This'll be snow, not ice, and it's liable to dump a couple of feet on us. It'll take a good while for it to melt off, too.
Of course, we can still get around even after it snows, but it'll be more difficult. If we have plenty of food, though, we won't need to. We can just hole up in our lodges until the weather is better.
Yeah, being stuck inside with Honey Gal for a week or so don't sound so bad. I reckon we could find plenty of ways to pass the time.
Yes, there's nothing like cold weather to bring out the friskiness in a woman.
I reckon that means the three of y'all are getting along with your gals.
Fine and dandy. I'm even starting to pick up some of the lingo. For instance, I know how to say...
What Lorenzo had learned how to say went unspoken as a sudden commotion erupted on the other side of the village.
We better find out what that's all about.
The four men walked across the village to find Chief Bentleg, Two Bears, and a number of other warriors gathered around a young man. The youngster's face was bloody from a cut on his forehead. The boy told his story.
What's going on?
More trouble. The Grove Honor back. That young fella and some of his friends had the same idea we did. They went out hunting to lay in a supply of fresh meat, but while they were over there toward the western side of the valley, some Grove Honor jumped them. Killed a couple of the Assiniboine boys and captured the rest. This younker's the only one who got away, and he got walloped in the head by a glancing blow from a tomahawk before he could manage to.
What are they gonna do with the prisoners? Make slaves out of them?
Yeah, they make slaves out of women and kids. The warriors they captured today might be young, but they're old enough to provide some entertainment for the rest of the band once the Grove Honor get back with them.
You mean they gonna torture them?
Grove Honor ain't big on torture. Not like, say, the Comanche down in Texas. But they're cousin to the Blackfoot, so they got plenty of meanness in them. Likely they'll kill those prisoners by burning them at the stake, just like the Blackfoot planned to do to me once.
You was gonna be burned at the stake?
I'll tell you the story sometime, Lorenzo, if Preacher doesn't want to. Right now, though, there are more pressing concerns.
That's right. I reckon Bentleg will send some of his warriors after those varmints to try to rescue the boys who got grabbed. I think we ought to go with them.
Volunteer to help, you mean?
Well, they're letting us spend the winter here with them. That makes us part of the band as long as we're here, to my way of thinking, anyway.
I ain't disagreeing with you. I was just making sure what was going on, that's all.
Might be a good idea for you to stay here, because we'll be moving fast.
Oh, and you think I'm too old to keep up, is that it? Think I'm just some feeble old codger who can't take care of himself in a fight? Hell's fire, Preacher. You ought to know better than that.
Now, that ain't what I said at all. I just figured it'd be a good idea for one of us to stay here and keep an eye on things in the village. This whole thing could be a trick, you know. If there's one bunch of Grove Honor raiders in the valley, there might be another.
A trick, huh? Like the first bunch wanted to lure most of the warriors away from the village, and then the second bunch could swoop in and raid the place?
Exactly.
Well, then, I reckon I can stay here to help out if I'm needed.
Well, good. That's a load off my mind.
Now that the wounded young man had told his story, the warriors were already making plans to go after the raiders. Two Bears seemed to be taking charge, even though Bentleg was the chief of the band. In times of trouble, a younger man could assume command as a war chief. Obviously, that was Two Bears' role. Followed by Audie and Nighthawk, Preacher approached Two Bears.
Three of us are coming with you.
No one asked you to accompany us.
Well, no one has to ask. For as long as we're here with your people, our hearts are Assiniboine.
No white man's heart can be Assiniboine, nor any Crow's.
Wait, you would turn down the help of a true warrior such as Preacher? Little Man and the Crow are respected fighters as well.
They are not of our people.
A wise man does not go into a fight with less strength than he might have had otherwise, solely because he is stubborn.
Very well. The white men and the Crow will go with us. But I will not save them at the cost of Assiniboine blood.
Nobody's asking you to. We'll take care of ourselves. You don't worry about that.
If that's settled, we'd better go gather our gear and say farewell to the ladies.
Preacher returned to his lodge to get his rifle, powder horn, shot pouch, and extra pistols. By the time he reached the brush corral where the horses were kept, Audie and Nighthawk were there too, ready in their mounts for the trip. Dog padded alongside behind Preacher, going wherever that mountain man went, as usual. Horse greeted Preacher with a toss of his head. After a few days here in the Assiniboine village, the rangy gray stallion appeared to be ready to get out and stretch his legs. Preacher felt the same damn way, which was why he had suggested the hunting trip. Unfortunately, they were going to be hunting men, and he wished that breaking the routine of village life hadn't come at the cost of two young men's lives. It didn't take long to saddle horse. The three men led their mounts back to the center of the village where the rest of the war party was gathering. The warriors were saying goodbye to their women. Preacher spotted Ravenswing moving through the crowd and thought she was probably there to tell Two Bears to be careful and wish him well. Instead, she stepped up to Preacher, facing him from a distance of less than a foot. She lifted her arms and then she put him around his neck. Then she pressed her mouth to his in the sort of kiss that white men and women exchanged.
White man!
Whoa! Two Bears grabbed Preacher and spun him around. He threw a fist at Preacher's face. That missed blow threw Two Bears off balance and made him stumble forward a step. Preacher hooked a punch of his own that landed solidly on Two Bears' jaw. Two Bears lunged forward and grabbed Preacher. Two Bears pressed his left forearm against Preacher's throat. But Two could play at this choking game. Preacher's right hand shot up and the fingers locked around Two Bears' throat. They rolled over, and Preacher drove a knee into Two Bears' belly and hung on to the warrior's throat. Two Bears' struggles became weaker, but they didn't stop completely.
Preacher! Preacher! That's enough!
Blinking, Preacher shook his head and looked around. Audie and Nighthawk flanked him protectively. They were all surrounded by the Assiniboine warriors, most of whom looked angry.
Preacher, you'd better let him go. If you choke him to death, things aren't going to go well for us.
Damn!
Bentleg stood nearby, glaring at him.
I'm sorry, Chief.
Bentleg silenced him with an upraised hand.
It is not your fault. Two Bears attacked you. You merely fought back. I would expect nothing less for a warrior of the Assiniboine, even a winter warrior. This was a fight between two men over a woman, nothing more. They will settle it between themselves, but not now. Now, two of our young men are dead, and others are in danger, captives of the hated Gravant. Have you all forgotten this?
My apologies, Bentleg. If you wish to remove me as war chief...
No. Go and bring back our young men. Punish the Gravant, and there will be no more trouble over the affections of my niece while this is going on. Do you understand?
Your word is law, my chief.
I'm agreeable to that, too.
Very well. Our enemies are fleeing, even as we speak. Find them. Kill them.
The wounded young Assiniboine, whose name was Stormbreaker, was in no shape to go with the war party to show him where he and the others had been attacked. He was able to give good directions to the spot to Two Bears, though, and since the war chief knew every inch of the valley, he'd have no trouble finding it. The warriors took enough provisions with them to last for several days in case the pursuit turned into a lengthy one. Preacher saddlebags held a good supply of jerky, flatbread, and pemmican. There was plenty of game in these mountains, too, if it turned out that they needed fresh meat. They might not want to risk a shot, but snares could always be set for rabbits. In most situations, Preacher just naturally took the lead. But that wasn't the case here. He didn't push himself to the front of the group. He was content to ride in the middle of the bunch with Audie and Nighthawk and let Two Bears lead the way. A couple of hours after leaving the village, they reached the site of the ambush. The bodies of the two fallen Assiniboine young men were still there, each riddled with arrows. Two Bears picked out a couple of men to take the bodies back to the village, and then the others pushed on. It was impossible to flee quickly through these woods without leaving some sign. And after taking prisoners, the Gros Ventres had been more interested in speed than stealth. So the trail was not difficult to follow. After a while, Preacher realized that it was leading generally in the direction of a notch in the rugged ridge that formed the western boundary of the valley. No matter how Two Bears felt about him, Preacher did not want to ride into anything blind. He pushed horse up alongside Two Bears' mount.
It's been a while since I've been in these parts. Refresh my memory, what's on the other side of that ridge there?
Badlands. Many gullies and more ridges. There are paths that lead through, but it is easy to get lost if one does not know the way.
And beyond that?
The area controlled by the Gros Ventres.
Those two young men back there were killed with arrows.
Yes. Gros Ventres arrows.
And the bunch that attacked us, the ones who captured Raven's Wing, they were armed with rifles.
The Gros Ventres possess a few old rifles. Trade muskets. Not very good. Since Snakeheart was sending those men into Assiniboine territory, he must have armed them with the best weapons he had.
Well, we shouldn't be outgunned too badly then, once we catch up with them.
If they have rifles, there will only be one or two. And they may blow up when they're fired.
They began climbing toward the notch. Preacher wasn't sure they would reach it before nightfall, and the Gros Ventres had a lead on them. If their quarry made it into the Badlands today, the Assiniboine might not be able to follow them.
Can you get through that mess you told me about in the dark?
No one can. Not even the Gros Ventres. They will make camp somewhere on the other side and wait for daylight.
Uh-huh. You sure about that?
You asked me a question, white man, and I answered it.
All right, fair enough.
But we will continue to climb. By morning, they will not be far ahead of us.
Preacher nodded. It sounded like a reasonable plan, although it meant they'd be traveling in darkness, which was often a risky proposition. Preacher and his companions, along with the Assiniboine, were very watchful as they pressed on during the slate gray afternoon. It was possible, though unlikely, that the Gros Ventres would double back and try to ambush them. There was a much better chance the raiders had lit a shuck out of the valley as soon as they grabbed those prisoners. They probably wouldn't try anything fancy, but only a fool doesn't keep his eyes open. Given the time of year and the overcast skies, it was still early when the light began to fade. Dusk started to settle down when the war party was still a couple of miles shy of the notch. True to his word, though, Two Bears kept the men moving. They were lined up on the gap in the ridge that was their destination. And as long as they kept going in a straight line, they ought to reach it without much trouble. Another worry started to nag at Preacher. He had considered it unlikely that the Gros Ventres would double back and ambush him here in the Assiniboine Valley. But that gap up there was another story. He tilted his head back and took a good look at it before all the light faded away. And what he saw confirmed his hunch. That gap in the ridge was a perfect place for a trap. It was only wide enough for a few riders to pass through at a time. Once their war party, some 30 strong, was strung out, even a much smaller force could do considerable damage to it in a short period of time. If the Gros Ventres were smart, they could split their force and send some of their warriors ahead with the prisoners, while the rest found hiding places that commanded a field of fire in that gap.
We gonna stop and make camp this side of the gap?
I told you, we must cut down their lead. We will stop on the other side of the gap.
What? You're gonna ride through there in the dark?
Are you afraid of the dark, white man?
No. But what's in it can make me a mite nervous sometimes. What if the Gros Ventres split up and left some men behind to ambush anybody who rides through the gap?
They're too stupid and cowardly for that. Now that they have prisoners, they want only to get back to their own land as soon as they can.
Oh, well, you seem mighty certain about that.
They are my enemies, not yours. I know them better than you do.
Oh, they're pretty much the same as Blackfoot. I know Blackfoot. They can be tricky critters when they want to.
We must catch them before they get through the Badlands. We will keep moving as long as we can.
Preacher saw that it wasn't going to do any good to keep arguing. In fact, it might have been a mistake for him to even say anything to Two Bears. Hell, the war chief was going to disagree with whatever he said just on general principles. He was too mad a preacher to listen and really hear. Preacher fell back again.
What were you and his Nibs talking about?
He plans for us to ride on through the gap in the ridge tonight and make camp on the other side.
I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
Yeah, I'm not either. He pretty much told me to go climb a stump.
Because he's angry with you over Ravenswing.
And because he's a proud, stubborn varmint to start with.
Indubitably. Are we going to keep going with them or pull out?
I reckon you know the answer to that.
Yes, I suspect that I do. Two Bears isn't the only one around here who is proud and stubborn.
Yeah, well, the difference is I don't let it make me do damn fool things.
Oh?
We're staying with them. And if they wind up in a heap of trouble, we'll do our best to pull them out.
In other words, business as usual.
Well, you call it what you want.
They pushed on. Soon it was dark enough that Preacher could barely make out the man riding in front of him. He checked the pistols tucked behind his belt to make sure they wouldn't hang up if he had to unlimber them in a hurry. The pistols in the saddle holsters were loaded and charged too, as was his rifle. All he had to do was cock and fire. As the war party reached the gap, the two sections of the ridge loomed above them, visible as dark, hulking shapes even in the thick shadow. Earlier, Dog had roamed away from the war party, but now that it was dark, the big cur padded along in his customary place right beside Preacher. Dog's instincts told him this was a bad idea, too. Preacher guided horse with his knees and lifted the flintlock in both hands, looping his right thumb over the hammer so he'd be ready to pull it back in a hurry if he needed to. The war party kept moving, the two bears in the lead, Preacher, Audie, and Nighthawk riding together about the middle of the pack. Preacher's head tilted back a little and swiveled back and forth on his neck. There was nothing to see up there above him. Nothing but darkness. Then suddenly, balls of garish red light flared into being in several places and fell out of the night like huge drops of crimson rain. Preacher knew what the Gros Ventres had done. They'd gathered tinder dry brush, rolled it into balls, and bound it together. Then they'd ignited those giant makeshift torches and kicked them over the edges of the cliffs that formed the gap. The blazing brush served two purposes. It blinded the Assiniboine and their allies, and it gave the Gros Ventres enough light to aim their arrows. One of the Gros Ventres let loose a war cry not far above his head. Preacher lifted the rifle to his shoulder. He didn't know if he hit anything, and there wasn't time to wait for his eyes to adjust. The best thing to do was to bust out of this trap if they could. So he drove his heels into the horse's flanks and sent the gray stallion leaping ahead in a burst of speed.
Everybody keep going! Keep moving!
The brush was burning itself out now. Darkness began to gather, and as Preacher emerged from the gap, he found himself surrounded by thick shadows once more. He hauled horse to a stop.
Dog!
Preacher felt relief go through him at the knowledge the big cur had survived the ambush. But that left him with other worries. More riders milled around him.
Audie! Nighthawk!
Here! Preacher, are you all right?
Oh, yeah. How about you?
I'm not much of a target. They missed me. But Nighthawk's not here.
How many are here?
I am War Chief here.
Yeah, well then you better take command.
We are between the Gros Ventres who attacked us and the rest of their party. They will come at us again.
Preacher thought that was probably right, but in the meantime they had wounded men back there in the notch. Wasted time meant lost lives.
Now you can wait here and block the trail so the Gros Ventres can't get through, and Audie and I are going back to see about the survivors.
You will ride right into the enemy.
Well, that's our problem, not yours.
Preacher heeled horse into motion again. With Dog bounding along beside him and Audie riding just behind, the Preacher headed for the gap. It didn't take long to run into trouble. Riders loomed up on the trail and charged him.
Yeah! Damn!
Preacher felt the wind from a tomahawk that swept past his head in a slashing blow. He thrust out his right-hand pistol at the shadowy figure who had swung the weapon. An arrow struck his saddle and lodged there. The shaft trembled. Preacher twisted in the direction it had come from. Preacher heard Audie's guns booming behind him. and dogs snarled and snapped furiously. With the empty pistols behind his belt again and the two guns from the saddle holsters in his hands, the Preacher fired into the chaos of shadowy figures crowding around him. Preacher's charge had broken the back of the attempt by the Gros Ventre to get past the Assiniboine. The track had backfired on the raiders. They had done some damage, but then they themselves had been trapped. Now Two Bears and the rest of the Assiniboine were closing in to finish off the Gros Ventre. Preacher left them to that task and galloped into the notch, followed by Audie and Dog.
Nighthawk! Nighthawk, where are you?
Preacher was guided to a dark shape sitting propped against one of the cliffs. Preacher dismounted quickly and dropped to a knee next to the Crow.
How bad are you hit?
Nighthawk took Preacher's hand and moved it to his side. Preacher felt the warm, wet blood soaking into Nighthawk's buckskin shirt. There didn't seem to be a lot of it, and that was a good sign. Nighthawk was wounded, but maybe not fatally.
How is he?
Well, he's not too bad, I hope. We could use some lights.
White man!
Over here! We need some fires!
Two Bears gave orders. This gap in the ridge was barren of vegetation except for the balls of brush that had already burned to ashes. So a couple of the Assiniboine warriors rode back down the slope they had climbed earlier to look for firewood. While they were gone, Preacher worked by feel, easing Nighthawk's shirt up so he could check the wound itself. It seemed to be a long, fairly clean slash in the Crow's side, deep enough to be more than a scratch, but probably not life-threatening. The men came back with brush and broken branches that Two Bears used to make a fire. Light confirmed Preacher's estimation of Nighthawk's injury. The Crow had lost enough blood to weaken him, but he'd be all right once the arrow wound was bound up and he'd had some time to recover. Some of the other members of the war party hadn't been as fortunate. Five Assiniboine warriors were dead, and another half dozen were wounded. That brought the number of men healthy enough to continue the pursuit of the captives down to 18. They didn't know how many warriors had been in the Gros Ventre raiding party. Stormbreaker had estimated about 40. But a good number of them were now dead, wiped out in the fight tonight.
Those who are not badly injured can stay behind and care for those who are. The rest of us will go ahead after the other Gros Ventre and the prisoners.
You said they wouldn't be able to make it through the Badlands in the dark, and that means they're probably not too far ahead of us.
So?
So they must be close enough to have heard the shots and maybe even the yelling. They're gonna know the warriors they left behind ambushed us, and when those men don't show up to join them, they're gonna know that we won the fight.
You are saying they will be on their guard?
Yeah, but not till morning, because they won't expect us to try to make it through the Badlands at night either.
A man would be a fool to attempt it. He might get lost and wander for weeks. We should wait for dawn so we can see where we're going.
Yeah, well, I know somebody who can make it through, or at least find the Gros Ventre camp for us.
You think very high of your abilities, white man.
Not me. Him.
Preacher pointed toward Dog, who sat nearby beside Nighthawk.
You would trust the lives of my men to that animal?
I'd trust my life to him, and have many times. I reckon if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for you fellas.
Preacher is right. Dog has the keenest nose west of the Mississippi. He can track those Gros Ventre through any sort of maze and lead you right to them.
If we could find their camp, we would take them by surprise. They would not expect any pursuit until morning.
Now, that's the idea. What do you say?
Two Bears looked around at the other warriors, but their faces were impassive. The decision was his to make. After a moment, he nodded.
If we wait, they may try to ambush us again. This way, we can turn things around and fall upon them with no warning.
Well, it might be better if we went ahead from here on foot. Hoofbeats will echo in those gullies and canyons.
A good idea.
Nighthawk started to get to his feet, but Preacher rested a hand on his shoulder and held him down.
Nighthawk, you've lost enough blood, it'd probably be a good idea for you to stay here. Audie, you reckon you can patch up Nighthawk and the rest of these wounded hombres?
I thought I'd come with you and the others, Preacher.
Yeah, and I'd love to have you along, but these fellows are hurt. If we don't come back, they're gonna need a good man to see to it that they get back to Bentleg's village.
If I didn't know better, I'd say you were just making an excuse to leave me behind, like you did with Lorenzo.
Oh, damn, Audie, not hardly. We fought side by side often enough, you ought to know better.
You're right. If you'll help me down, I'll see what I can do about tending to the various injuries among these men.
A few minutes later, the group of warriors that would be going on after the Gros Ventre were ready to move out on foot, taking only their weapons. One way or another, this was gonna end tonight, so they didn't really need the supplies anymore. Preacher led Dog out of the notch and down the slope to the area where the bodies of the dead Gros Ventre littered the ground. Preacher cut an unbloodied piece of buckskin from one man's shirt and held it under Dog's nose.
Did you find the rest of the bunch?
You can do it, old son.
Fine!
Dog trotted away, nose to the ground. He cast back and forth for a moment, then started on a fairly straight course deeper into the Badlands. Preacher hurried on, and after him came Two Bears and the rest of the Assiniboine. They hadn't gone very far into the Badlands before Preacher felt the cold kiss of a snowflake against his leathery cheek. That was fine. Let it snow. Dog would still be able to follow the scent of the Gros Ventre, and a coating of the powdery white stuff would muffle the sounds of their approach even more. Whether Two Bears liked it or not, Preacher had taken the lead now. He was used to keeping up with Dog when the big cur was following a trail. Finally, Dog came to such an abrupt halt that Preacher almost tripped over him. He knelt and slipped an arm around the big cur, feeling how Dog's muscles were now tense.
The Gros Ventre are close.
Yeah, they built a fire. Probably too small to see unless you're real close, but I can smell it. You better let me and Dog go ahead and do some scouting.
We will wait here, but not for long.
The snow was falling thickly now, and the ground was beginning to turn white, which made it a little easier to see where they were going. On the other hand, the lighter background would make it easier for anybody to see them moving against it, Preacher thought, as he and Dog slipped forward soundlessly. Their breath fogged in front of their faces. Dog led the way into a narrow passage between two huge upthrusts of rock. Preacher could have put his hands out and brushed his fingertips against the rock walls on both sides. Those walls rose 50 or 60 feet and seemed to lean in oppressively. The passage ran straight at first for 100 or so yards, then began to angle back and forth. It would be impossible for the two groups to fight a battle in here. There simply wasn't enough room for anything other than mano-a-mano combat. The farther he and Dog went, the darker it got. Not much snow had fallen down here through the narrow crack above. Preacher reached down and grasped the thick fur at the back of Dog's neck so he and the big cur wouldn't get separated in the almost impenetrable gloom.
Stay. I know if there's ruckus, you want to be right in the middle of it. Now don't worry. I'm just gonna go take a look.
Preacher stole forward, guiding himself by touch as he kept his left hand on the stone wall. As he went forward, Preacher sensed the presence of one of the warriors in the narrow passage just ahead of him. Preacher stood absolutely still until his eyes picked out the man-shaped patch of deeper darkness 6 feet in front of him. The man was leaning against the rock wall. He was probably tired and having trouble staying awake. After a while, the guard's head drooped forward a little. He dozed off. Preacher lowered the body slowly and carefully to the ground. He pulled the blade free and wiped the blood on the dead man's shirt. He stepped over the corpse and moved deeper into the passage. The narrow trail through the rocks twisted again. Now, he could see an orange glow from the campfire. The passage opened onto a broad ledge that ran to the left. The ledge was about 20 feet wide. Then it dropped off sharply into a deep ravine. The Gros Ventre had built their fire on that level ground. Rocks overhung the place, giving it some protection from the wind and the snow. Preacher took his hat off and edged his head out a little more as he looked for the Assiniboine prisoners. He spotted them, 7 or 8 young men sitting at the base of the wall that loomed over the ledge. From the way they were sitting, their hands were lashed behind their backs, probably with rawhide strips. They looked angry, miserable, and afraid all at the same time. Preacher did a quick count of the Gros Ventre, 22 warriors. Counting the sentry he had killed, 23. That agreed with earlier estimates, so the Assiniboine were outnumbered, but not by a great deal. And if he could free those prisoners, that would tip the odds in their favor. Unfortunately, he couldn't see any way to reach the captives. Their would-be rescuers couldn't count on their help. Some of the Gros Ventre were asleep, but others were still awake. One of them stood up, stretched, went over to the far side of the ledge and relieved himself over the rim of the ravine. Then he turned and walked toward the narrow passage where Preacher stood. This fellow was about to take over for the guard Preacher had killed, which meant that discovery wasn't far off. The man entered the passage and came closer. Preacher was absolutely still and silent now. He didn't make his move until the unsuspecting man stepped past him. Then, uncoiling like a striking snake, Preacher looped his left arm around the warrior's throat from behind, clamped down to cut off any sound, and drove his knife into the man's back. Preacher lowered the body to the ground as he had with the other guard. That left 21 raiders to deal with. If he could just figure out a way to get them to stroll into the passage one at a time, he could handle them. They weren't going to do that, though. When neither of the guards came back to the fire, after a while, they'd start wondering what was wrong. Then several of the men would come to investigate, more than likely. They might be able to attack two at a time, but considering the passage's narrow confines, it was more likely that just one man could charge in once they suspected that an enemy lurked there. And as soon as they knew that for sure, they'd back off and send arrows whistling along the passage. Preacher was confident that he could take cover behind the first bend and be safe enough, but he still couldn't free the prisoners from there. It would be a standoff, and if that happened, ultimately the Gros Ventre would win. They could leave two or three warriors with plenty of arrows on the ledge. That'd be enough to keep the Assiniboine bottled up in there until the rest of the raiders were long gone with the prisoners. No. A surprise attack was the only chance he and his allies had. He turned back the way he'd come from. Two Bears had warned him that they wouldn't wait long, and they hadn't. The rest of the Assiniboine rescue party was slipping through the passage toward him.
Two Bears, white man, are there any of your fellows who are good at climbing?
You mean climbing a tree? There are no trees here.
I was thinking more rock climbing. If somebody could get above that ledge and drop down on it while the Gros Ventre were distracted, it could cut the prisoners loose and they could get in on the fight, too.
Climb that cliff in the dark? It cannot be done.
It's our best chance. Hell, I'll do it.
You will fall and die.
Well, then, if I do, it'll be your problem figuring out how to rescue those boys, won't it?
What is this distraction you speak of?
If I'm doing the climbing, the distraction will be on your part. If it was me, I'd just sort of saunter out onto the ledge and dare them Gros Ventre to come after me. They'll rush over here after you, and while they're busy doing that, I'll drop down behind them and free the prisoners. Then we'll jump the varmints from that direction. When they swing around and see what in blazes is going on, that's when the rest of you come pouring out. We'll hit them from both directions at once, and we'll have the odds on our side if I can get those boys loose.
Sounds like it might work. But how will I know when you are ready so I can distract them?
Yeah, that's a problem, all right. I'd let out a bird call to signal you, but I don't reckon there are many birds around these parts at this time of year.
No, not many. But can you howl like a wolf?
Oh, hell. Folks have accused me of being old Lobo. I can sound like one if I need to.
Then that will be the signal. Go. There's no more time to waste.
No, there's sure not.
Preacher found what seemed to be a sturdy grip.
Listen for the wolf.
Then he began pulling himself up the steep rock wall. This was the second time in recent weeks he had climbed a cliff to turn the tables on a bunch of Gros Ventre raiders. Preacher moved as fast as he could, but it was inevitable that having to work completely by feel in almost total darkness, it did slow him down some. A minute later, he spotted a faint orange glow in the sky to his right. but had to be coming from the campfire. He was getting there.
Not much farther now.
But time was running out. The Grovant warriors who were still awake would probably be wondering by now why the guard who'd been relieved hadn't come to join them. If they went to investigate too soon, the plan would be ruined. The preacher tried to move a little faster.
Up and to the right.
As long as he didn't encounter a stretch without any footholds and handholds, he could make it.
Damn.
And of course, that jinxed him. It never failed. He had to stop. Try as he might, he couldn't find any other grips within reach to his right. The preacher tilted his head back to study the rock wall above him. He thought he could probably continue going straight up, but that wasn't going to put him any closer to the Grovant camp. That appeared to be his only option, though, so he stretched one arm above his head and found a small, protruding rock. He grasped it tight, felt around with a foot until he found the little crevice that he could get the toe of his boot into. Seconds ticked past, and with each one, Preacher's nerves grew tighter. After a minute or so, he found a crack that angled up and to the right, just the way he wanted to go. He wedged his toes into it and began sliding along. It petered out after about 15 feet, but from where he was, with the glow from the fire helping him to see now, he could make out the giant slab of rock that overhung the Grovant camp. It was about 10 feet below him and 3 or 4 feet ahead of where he clung to the rock. It was an easy enough jump if he'd had a place from which to launch himself. As it was, though, all he could do was let go, push off from the rock, and twist his body as he fell in hopes that he could reach the stone slab. If he missed, he'd tumble helplessly down into the darkness. But again, there was no choice. The preacher tensed all his muscles and flung himself away from the cliff as hard as he could. Twisting in midair, he reached out desperately for the rock where he wanted to land. The edge of the slab hit him in the belly, and his hand slapped against the stone and began to struggle for purchase. The rough surface painfully gouged his palms and fingertips, but he hung on for dear life and stopped the slide before he went too far over the edge and fell. Gritting his teeth from the effort, Preacher pulled himself forward until all of his body was sprawled on the slightly slanting top of the massive rock. As soon as he'd caught his breath, Preacher sat up. He turned back toward the passage where he had left two bears and the other Assiniboine.
Good old dog.
Preacher hadn't expected the big cur to pitch in and make the charade even more convincing. The Grovant wouldn't be suspicious of a pair of wolves howling at each other across the Badlands. On hands and knees, Preacher crawled toward the other side of the rock slab. He went down on his belly the last few yards and took his hat off so he could peer over the edge. He couldn't see the prisoners from where he was, of course. Hell, he couldn't even see the campfire.
Grovant! You dung-eating dogs! Let my warriors go!
Instead, the raiders charged along the ledge toward the mouth of the passage. Preacher swung around and slid backward so that his legs dangled off the rock. If he dropped straight down, he would land about a yard from the ledge's rim. As long as he didn't overbalance and topple backward, he'd be fine. That drop took only a heartbeat, but it was a breathtaking instant. Two of the raiders stood between Preacher and the captives, bows in hands with arrows knocked. Preacher threw himself forward as one of the Grovant fired. As he came up, his knife was already in his hand. The blade transfixed the other guard's throat, not only inflicting a mortal wound, but also ensuring that he couldn't let out a warning shout to the other members of his party. Preacher bounded toward the prisoners, who watched him with wide, shocked eyes. All of them probably knew who he was, knew that he'd been staying in the village of Bentleg's people and was considered a friend. Still, they might have experienced a moment of nervousness as this grim-faced white man holding a blood-dripping knife charged toward him. Then, Preacher was behind him. The blade severed the bonds holding him.
Go! You're not prisoners anymore! It's time to teach those Grovant a lesson!
captives' hands had been tied, but their feet were free. They leaped up and charged toward the Grovant clustered around the mouth of the passage. A couple of the raiders were able to swing around and loose arrows at the charging young warriors. One of the shafts missed, but the other thumped into the chest of a young man, causing him to stumble and fall. But the rest of the group slammed into their former captors, and the other Assiniboine warriors, led by Two Bears, came fighting out of the passage. Suddenly, all hell was breaking loose on the ledge. Preacher pulled the loaded pistols from behind his belt and stalked forward. Movement in the corner of Preacher's eyes made him swing around instinctively, just in time to see another of the Grovant lining up an arrow that was aimed at Two Bears' back. Two Bears was smart enough to figure out what had just happened. And judging by the scowl on the war chief's face, he didn't like knowing that the mountain man had saved his life. The Grovant were being overwhelmed now. Preacher waded in and smashed the skull of one raider with an empty pistol. The men still struggling on the ledge had to wade through pools of blood to do so. This little corner of the Badlands had become a charnel house. In a matter of moments, the fight was over, and all the Grovant were dead. Five of the Assiniboine warriors had been killed too, including two of the former prisoners. Preacher knew they would have considered their deaths to be for a good cause, and those deaths had been avenged. In the morning, the bodies of the Assiniboine dead would be taken back to the village and laid to rest with the proper customs and respect. Dog bounded out of the passage a few minutes later. He had stayed where Preacher had told him, and as a result, he had missed the fight. Preacher could have sworn that the look Dog gave him was reproachful. The snow was still falling. Preacher hadn't even noticed it during the battle. All his thoughts had been focused on staying alive and accomplishing what he'd set out to do.